To order, Margarita, please call the roll.
Chair Grant?
Here.
Vice Chair Botana?
Here.
Ranking Member Chambliss is excused. Representatives Busata Cabrera? Cassell?
Here.
Escamani?
Here.
Esposito? Franklin? Jalombardo? Mooney?
Here.
Plasencia?
Here.
Roach?
Present.
Schoff? Stevenson is excused. Tant?
Present.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. For everybody in the audience, members, please make sure you turn off your electronic devices or place them on silent mode. Good afternoon. Welcome back to the Select Committee on Hurricane Resiliency and Recovery. In August, as you know, we got hit with a hurricane that made landfall on our state as a destructive Category 3 hurricane. Idalia was the third major hurricane on record to make landfall in the Big Bend region and the strongest to make landfall since the Cedar Key hurricane back in 1896. Hurricane Idalia brought significant storm surge and riverine flooding on Florida's west coast, including peak storm surge level of 8 feet at the Sonohatchee and a 9.9 foot storm surge that devastated Cedar Key. Other areas generally experienced flooding of 3 to 4 feet, and preliminary insurance estimates put the damage at over $9 billion. Today, we'll hear from representatives of the many local governments that were in the path of this storm. This is an opportunity to gather lessons learned and improve our ability to prepare for, respond to, and recover from storms that we may face in the future. We've invited representatives from Cedar Key, Columbia, Hamilton, Jefferson, Lafayette, almost got there, Madison, Suwannee, and Taylor counties to describe the major impacts in the respective areas from this hurricane, their recovery efforts, and the assistance that they need to continue in their recovery efforts. Members, please hold your questions until each of the panelists has finished their opening remarks. Then we will have a discussion with the panelists regarding the impacts and what we can do as a state to assist those in the recovery efforts. We have, starting from my left to right, Mayor Heath Davis of Cedar Key. We have Shane Morgan, Emergency Management Director of Columbia County. Pam Allen, Emergency Management Deputy Director, Hamilton County. Sheriff McNeil, Jefferson County. Deputy Sheriff Bobby Lawson, Lafayette County. Lee Bassford, Emergency Management Director, Madison County. And Commissioner Travis Land, Suwannee County. And LaWanda Pemberton, County Administrator for Taylor County. Welcome. Thank you all for being here. And on behalf of the Select Committee, we will appreciate hearing the comments that you have to say. And we'll start with you, Mayor Davis from Cedar Key.
Thank you, Chair Grant and Vice Chair Botana. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here today with these other members and help you guys have a better understanding of how we navigate through our different recovery hurdles after a storm like Idalia. As you mentioned, it's the worst storm we've had in Cedar Key for over 100 years. And my great-grandmother was a little girl when that storm hit over 100 years ago. And her aunt was in one of the cabins nearby, and the surge was happening, and back then they didn't have the notifications like we have today. And she got swept out in the current, and they found her, and of course she didn't make the storm. And I tell that story to tell you that, you know, we're very fortunate now to have the technology and the support that we get from our partners, such as you guys and the agencies that serve you guys. And to my knowledge, I don't think we had any incidents in this storm in our area, and I hope we didn't have in the other areas. But us being able to use those tools to warn our citizens and help our citizens make it where things like that don't happen. But, you know, it's because of that story and the living on the coast, as I have since that time, my family, that we've learned to try to live with these storms, and it's living with them that has helped us be more resilient and create more of a character to to be able to see these storms and respect them so that when they're over and they're gone and it's time to move on, we can roll up our sleeves and get back to work. And we did that in Cedar Key. We were able to host our annual seafood festival 42 days later. It was a booming success. I hope all of y'all came and spent money. I didn't see all y'all there, but thank you if you did. And if you didn't, you can come back next year. And what's neat about our festival is it's non-for-profit. So all that money goes to our schools and our school kids. And they were able to use that money, and they'll buy school uniforms and things like that that they need. As we continue the recovery, we're about four businesses short of being back to where we were. We do have some structures that we won't get back because of regulations beyond the state and the city's control. We hope to have the four or five businesses that aren't open, we hope to have them open in the next few months. I think that everybody on this panel it would agree with this statement. When you're a small community, you do the best that you can to serve your citizens, and with that, you hope to give them your best customer service. For example, if they apply for a building permit, we hope to try to get that right back to them. There are computer programs and things like that that we participated in that are helping, but we're just not quite there yet. And the fact is that it's just a manpower issue, and we're not ever going to have the manpower to facilitate a recovery effort in a storm like this. To be very direct with you and to give you maybe an understanding, in this very important select committee, y'all have more staff than I have in my city hall helping my citizens recover. So as we try to rebuild and try to help those citizens get those permits, we can move forward with the faith of the past examples, such as sometimes we can apply to get that additional monies back from FEMA, and we usually do get it. We have to make sure our paperwork's in order. But Cedar Key's lucky. We have hills. We have some of the highest land on the Gulf Coast of Florida. These other communities, they don't have those hills. So in little communities such as Suwannee, Horseshoe Beach, in my county, English, Yankee Town, when a storm like this comes in, there's no place to go set back up to help those citizens. And it makes it difficult to give what these businesses and citizens need right away. So we're struggling with that. We're helping those citizens the best we can. We've tripled our budget as it relates to the, quote, building department, so that we can flush those building applications through. To give you an example of how many that is, it's more applications than we've had this calendar year prior to the hurricane and all of last year. So it's a massive amount of workload coming in a very short period of time when folks need to get back to work. And we've tripled that budget to try to hire additional contractors to come in and help facilitate those building permits. Cedar Key is also unique in the fact that we have a clam industry. I think one of your committees heard from some of my fellow industry members last week, and I appreciate that. But the industry, it struggles too. You know, the help that we hope that you guys will participate in, it comes at a much later date, and those folks they need that help now, and I'm not at all being disrespectful to any help that y'all may give us, but it is a very delayed time. And as y'all know, regional seafood distribution is just different than it used to be. A lot of times now, if a particular thing is not available, whether it be black grouper, which we all like, or seafoods like that. A lot of times the restaurant will just remove it off the menu and only put it on as a special item. And what's neat about the clam industry is we're able to produce fresh clams to not just Florida, but the Southeast United States, and even further, all year round. And that industry is really struggling. But that's a large part of our community of Cedar Key. And I've got a lot more that I can say, but I really appreciate the panel that's here with me. I look forward to hearing what they have to say, and I hope that I can answer some questions that'll help you guys help us, because I know that's what you want to do. And I would say one more thing, though. When I talk about the building permit process that we're struggling with, of those permits, only three of them are city permits. All that work that we're doing is permits that are mandated by the state of Florida through the Florida Building Code. And, of course, the FEMA flood code was incorporated into the Florida Building Code in 2012. There's still some issues with that. I think y'all heard about that a little bit last month from a South Florida presenter, if I read your minutes correctly. But essentially, we're doing the work that is mandated to us by the state and by the federal government. And I only share that with you to share that that workload is not laws that we are enforcing. So, again, I really appreciate this opportunity, and I look forward to hearing from the other panelists, and I hope I can answer some questions if y'all have those questions.
Thank you, ma'am, for your presentation. Next, we have Shane Morgan, Emergency Management Director of Columbia County. You are recognized, sir.
Good afternoon, and thank you, Chair Grant, Vice Chair Botana, and members of this committee for having us here to speak with you today. Columbia County is an inland county, and we were impacted by Hurricane Idalia in a different way than we're used to. A lot of times we'll be impacted by a disaster. It'll be a lot of flooding around the county due to excess rain coming down in a short amount of time and flooding our low-lying areas. Well, this one has been completely different. It's been more of a debris operation, and the flooding was limited for our county, fortunately, at that point. But our estimate as of this morning is that approximately 52,643 cubic yards of debris have been picked up in our debris clearing operation, which will equal out to approximately $736,000 in costs as far as the debris operation itself goes. This does not take into account debris monitoring or the emergency protective measures that we undertook as an emergency operations center, and also opening shelters and those types of things that we did for our community. We opened four general population shelters and one special needs shelter. And for us, we utilize county staff to do our shelter operations. Early on in this one, when the forecast was looking like it was going to be more of a direct hit for us at Columbia County, I put in a request to the state for additional manpower to man those shelters, because quite honestly, I wasn't sure that my county staff was going to be in a position to come open them up. So I was able to get some additional staff at the state level through the Division of Emergency Management, and they were a great help to us through this process. Our special needs shelter is run by our local health department, the Columbia County Health Department. They handle it, and we have a very good working relationship with them. And the workers that we've received through the state also helped in that one as well. So emergency management, you will hear a common thread with a lot of us here at the table. We're shops of one, two people. Just until last December, I was a shop of one. I now have a fire captain that assists me on a part-time basis in addition to his fire duties. He comes in and helps me with what I need in emergency management. So I'm now up to, I consider it a team of one and a half. But it's still, as you can see, it's a lot to take on for any one, two, three people in our position, especially when the skies are gray and we're having to deal with these type of recovery efforts as we are right now. I'm a lifelong resident of Columbia County. I began with emergency management in 2003, and I took over as director in 2011, so I've seen quite a few different disasters: Tropical Storm Debbie, the Bugaboo Wildfire, any number of ones that have happened to the state since then, I have been a part of in some way or other for our county. As I mentioned, we suffered some damage. We did have a FEMA Disaster Recovery Center that was opened. Fortunately, we got to the point where we were able to close it last week, and we had a number of people that were able to take advantage of the FEMA benefits to help get them back on the road to recovery. So, like the mayor said, I look forward to hearing the other panelists and answering whatever questions I can today. And I thank you again for having us here this afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you for that presentation. Next up, we have Pam Allen, Emergency Management Deputy Director for Hamilton County. Welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Grant and Vice Chair Batana. It's an honor to represent Hamilton County today. When we normally do an exercise or an event in our county, we always afterwards do three ups, three downs. Basically, as you mentioned, lessons learned. So I'd like to talk to you about our three ups and three downs. One of ours, downs, I always start with a down and I end on a good note, so I end with our ups. But one of our three downs is debris on private property. As you heard the other two, we have had an enormous, unimaginable amount of debris. It doesn't matter to us whether that debris is on a private road, a public road. We have to access all those roads, as well as our school buses, our emergency traffic, our residents. Everybody has to be able to go down those roads safely and in a timely manner. Our problem with that is we can get PA money, we can get assistance to get our county roads open, but not our private roads. And in our county, we have a few HOAs, but they're not probably what you're used to calling an HOA. Our HOA just simply means it's a community that people live in. They don't really pay dues or maintain roads. So to us, those are our county roads because sometimes we have to maintain them to a certain standard where they or us can get emergency vehicles down and school buses. So that has become an issue with our residents. We were lucky that we had a church organization come in for three weekends, but it's hard to ride by and you see 80-year-old men out with a chainsaw doing their best to clean their front yard. And then when they do get it piled up, then they call us and say, I can't get it to the roadside for FDOT to pick up. And, you know, we just don't have the means to help them. And it's kind of heartbreaking, you know, when they say, but this is going to cause rodents, this is going to cause more mosquitoes, this is going to cause, you know, a variable of these incidences, and we understand that, and we wish we could help you, but right now we just, there's no volunteers to help. So that's one of our issues. Another issue is gas. When we lose power, our gas stations can't operate their pumps. You know, we practice and tell people, buy generators, especially if you're a special needs person and you have life-sustaining equipment such as oxygen and you need that, get a generator. But what do you do when you can't get gas? And they're running 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks continuously. So we've got to come up as a state with some kind of incentive that gas stations are able to get a transfer switch. Yes, I can requisition a generator, but if they don't have that transfer switch in place, it's no good. They've got to have a transfer switch. They've got to have a generator. If we could come up with an incentive that benefits them and us, that we get those pumps operating. That's, I think, a lot of our issue is people are concerned that they don't get that generator gas. Another thing we have an issue with is cemeteries. Now, we have a lot of cemeteries that I guess you could define as abandoned. They're pre-Civil War. There's some that people were buried in the, you know, early 1900s. And if you look at Florida Statute 497.284, it authorizes a county to maintain and secure an abandoned cemetery that's not been maintained for more than 6 months. Well, we take it on as a county to try to maintain as many cemeteries as we can. However, with this hurricane, these trees fell on top of these cemeteries and many graves have now, the vaults have been opened. When I contacted the state, they said basically there is nothing in place to help us with these open vaults. I'm having to take care of living people. I want to help take care of these people as well. They're Hamilton County residents. They're buried there. They're a resident. And I want to be able to reach out and help them and tell this family, look, it's okay. We got this. We're going to help you with this. Right now we've put a piece of tarp over it and put sand on it. We all know that's a temporary fix to a long-term problem. We since had quite a bit of rain the other day. We've since removed some of the tarps and put a piece of plywood down and put sand over it. But there again, that's a temporary fix to a long-term problem. We've got to do something to help these people. I know I recently just had to pay for a funeral, and it's not cheap. I can tell you, it is not cheap. It cost me $16,000. And there's got to be something that we can do to help with these abandoned cemeteries, because we just can't, we can't take that on as a county when we're trying to take on our living people. But to end on the three ups, since I gave you my three downs, I can't tell you how much it meant for Representative Schoaf and Senator Simon and Representative Kamek to come into our EOC. You know, we get hundreds of phone calls a day. Everybody's wanting to update. Everybody wants this. Everybody wants that. And in a small community, everybody calls you because you're the one who knows, or they think you know. I can't say what a blessing it was for them to actually walk in and say, I'm here to help. What can I do? You know, and especially when they walk in with the chainsaw and gas, and you're like, yeah, let's go. You know, that was one of the first things we did when that storm passed. We armed our deputies with chainsaws. We partner up with the road department and said, get the roads clear. We got to get emergency traffic in and out. So, you know, it was a blessing that they actually came to our EOC many times, not just once, but many times. And we got to see them face to face and say, these are our issues. This is what we need. And they were on top of it. Another thing was the Florida Department of Transportation debris contract. There are some issues with it. We do have some issues. But hopefully going forward, we're going to get through those issues, and that's going to be a great asset to us. Because as you heard from Columbia County, that debris, I can't even imagine to begin to describe the debris to you that we have. But that has been a blessing to us that we have not had to undertake that, along with all the other problems that we've had. And then the third thing is emergency management. They were awesome. We put in missions to Web EOC for equipment, personnel. They were there. They handled it in a timely manner. They got us what we needed, and that, too, has been a blessing. You know, as we always say, we prepare for the worst and we pray for the best, and that's what we're going to continue doing. And we hope that we have your support in going forward, and that's, we'll just keep on praying. Thank you.
Thank you, and I'm sure Representative Schoaf thanks you, too. looks like you all elected the right person. Next up, we have Sheriff McNeil from Jefferson County. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Grant, Vice Chair Botana, and the members of the committee for having us here today. You know, as far as Jefferson County, we were on the western end of the storm, and you'll look at some of the, I look at other members of this panel, and I can tell how fortunate we were because I've seen some of their areas and the devastation this storm caused. And even our little county, even though we wasn't as bad as them, it hit us pretty hard. This is the hardest storm we've had since I'd been there. And I'm just going to kind of tell you our story about how we handled the storm and how we went about it. And then, you know, whether through the questions, talk about some ways that the state did amazing jobs and some ways I think that they could do better to help us. And so, you know, we saw this storm coming. At first, it looked like it was supposed to go in right around Cedar Key. So while we were preparing for it, we just didn't think we were going to get that much from it. But as these storms go, you never can trust them. They just do what they want to do. And as the night went on, you know, the couple of days before the storm, we were getting stuff prepared, getting stuff placed, because we knew we were going to get some winds out of it. And then we noticed the storm kept moving to the west. It wasn't going to make that turn that we kept thinking it was going to turn. And we saw these updates keep moving, and slowly Cedar Key, Keaton Beach, Perry, and at one point, one of the last updates had it going right up the Osceola River, which is right between us and Madison. And we were highly concerned, being a small county, fiscally constrained, with limited resources, we knew that this was going to be bad. Fortunate for us in Jefferson County, there at the end, it took that eastward turn back, and it spared us somewhat. But, you know, we still had zero power in our county. It took out our whole power grid. And, you know, most of our residents are on well water. And when you don't have power, your well don't work. And if you don't own a generator, which would be a lot of people cannot afford and don't have, then you have no way to get, they don't have water. And so, you know, we knew, basically, we worked the storm right up to the point the winds got too high and we had to go in. And our deputies partnered with our road department, and we have a local company that is a search and rescue company that has a bunch of equipment. And, you know, we have chainsaws in all our deputies' cars, and we were cutting trees and clearing roads even while the storm was approaching, because we knew at the end, when the storm got by us, it's all about the roads. It's about saving lives and getting the roads cleared so the power companies can get back in. And that's what gets people's lives back to normal. And, you know, that's what we were very successful in. Within 2 days, we started getting our power back on after they told us it was going to be anywhere from 9 to 14 days. And, you know, when I spoke to some of the representatives from Duke, they said it was because how clear our roads were that they could get in and help. And I can't say enough about Duke and Tri-County, the two power companies in our area, and how hard they work to get the power back on to people. But, you know, I can't thank Representative Tant enough for you being there, Representative Schoaf, Senator Simon. You know, you got the right elected officials when they're there hand-in-hand with you, helping hand out stuff, helping, you know, distribute supplies. And so I want to thank y'all for that. I want to thank the state for what y'all do with the state EOC. Where would we be today without the state EOC and what they do for us? It's amazing. So, and the National Guard, I can't leave them out. Amazing what they did for us and what they do when they come out and do. And some of them, you got to remember, kind of like our deputies, you know, you might have deputies have homes damaged, but they're out helping the people of their community. And some of the National Guard guys are the same exact way, guys and girls are the same exact way. They could have come from an affected area, but yet they're still out doing what they can to help people. So, you know, again, I want to thank everybody this. I hope I can answer any of your questions along the way. I mean, again, we were one of the least affected, but there was still an effect for us, and we learned a lot along the way to hopefully, if this happens again, maybe not while I'm sheriff, maybe later on afterwards, that, you know, we'll be better prepared to address the storm. But I will say, you know, you just got to remember, every one of these counties and cities up here are in fiscally constrained counties. This area of this state is not a well-off area. It's a fiscally poor area. And so a lot of our resources and infrastructure is really tasked and really, you know, used. It's just hard for us to get some of the things done that some of these bigger areas can. And that's some of the things that maybe we can talk about is what can we do to help these counties that are fiscally constrained and don't have the resources or the funds to prepare for these kind of storms. Because we are on the coast. Most of us are touching the coast in some way, shape, or form, or close enough to it that we're going to see a storm like this again, probably many of them. And we need to find out what we can do to prepare these I'll say little counties, because we're all pretty little, these little counties to be ready to respond to them in a better fashion. So again, thank y'all, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Deputy Sheriff Bobby Lawson from Lafayette County.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Grant and Chair Batana, for the opportunity to speak with you today. Just to give some of you that's not familiar with Lafayette County a little backdrop, and it'll help lead into more of what did I have to say, that what our needs are in Lafayette County is, for those that you don't know, Lafayette County is a rural, agriculturally based county comprising of 548 square miles. Lafayette County has a population of 8,200 people thereabouts. We have only approximately 2,500 households in the county. During this storm, or after the storm, there was about 1,843 valid registrations that had been made with FEMA. During and since the aftermath of the storm, our agricultural farms, businesses have suffered the greatest impact. Our timbers, our dairies, our beef cattle operations, our poultry, tobacco, peanuts, hay, fruit, and cotton producers have all greatly been affected. But I'll start with a note or two that I have made that I have recognized during, before, and after Hurricane Idalia. I'll start with the good, or some of it, and you'll get other things from other members that are here today that's important also. One of the positive things that we noted coming out of this was the establishment of the Volunteer Village. It was established there in Lafayette County because of its central location to the most impacted counties, and those were the ones that surrounded us. It provided a good base of operation for volunteer organizations. The village alleviates local jurisdictions and local nonprofits from logistical burdens of supporting these groups, such as their sleeping and eating needs. You know, it's easier to get volunteers if you got somewhere for them to take a clean shower, get a bath, and have something to eat 24 hours a day, which they did. Another is the establishment of a knowledgeable regional recovery coordinator in impacted counties early on, especially in those counties that do not have internal or contracted recovery expertise. It puts those counties in a better position to maximize their post-storm recovery. At Florida Division of Emergency Management, they place such an individual in Lafayette County early on, and we are reaping the benefits of it as I speak now in with all of our FEMA submissions. So, you know, I greatly appreciate the Florida Division of Emergency Management for recognizing this and see that it got done. Mask care resources were plentiful and responsive. It is important that this level of state support continues for similar disasters, as a precedent has been set. To note, the National Guard was there. They were on the ground immediately. I won't reiterate what the other gentleman said, but they were a big asset. The Florida Department of Transportation debris management greatly assists financially constrained counties, and especially those without pre-existing debris contracts. But even those with contracts in place, the upfront costs are often insurmountable for communities without large reserves. And Lafayette County don't have large reserves. We barely get by as it is. Enhanced coordination in the future events with local road and bridge and public works agencies will ensure a comprehensive and safe debris operation. At the present time, and I'm going to give you rounded off numbers, the Florida Department of Transportation has picked up over 881,000 cubic yards of debris and are still picking up. At this time, the cost to the Florida Department of Transportation for debris pickup and monitoring is over $17 million. Lafayette County had a debris contract in place, and so the first few days we hit the ground running, got ourselves in good shape early on, but we realized at the rate we were going, it wasn't going to be long before the county was going to be broke. And so a big thanks to the state and the Florida Department of Transportation for picking up these costs. We greatly appreciate you all taking the time to conduct a special session last week to address some of the needs of the farmers. As Lafayette County is a rural, agriculturally based county, like I said, with very little industry. That was desperately needed, and we appreciate you for that. Some of the opportunities for improvements. Agriculturally based communities tend to have to wait for the types of assistance provided by the U.S. Department of Agriculture and similar programs. Larger agricultural operations may be able to withstand that delay, but with smaller operations, that delay may mean having to make difficult decisions. Anything that can be done to expedite assistance to farms would be beneficial. Smaller communities that are not near large media markets receive less attention from media and must rely on social media and creative ways to disseminate information. In the future, it may be helpful for the state EOC to develop procedures when rural communities are impacted that would enable those communities to use generic and customizable graphics that counties can use. This will alleviate the need for duplication and each county having to do their own. This happened as several counties leveraged mutual aid PIOs with those skill sets, but a focus plan would be beneficial to everyone. In rural counties such as Lafayette and surrounding counties, the scope of damage and the amount of debris cleanup that was needed and supported by the Florida Division of Emergency Management and state government by providing a volunteer coordinator, which some of us call a VOL, throughout the duration of the cleanup process would best serve the interest of the county and our citizens. Such a person would provide initially, but was demobilized by the Florida Division of Emergency Management. Rural counties' emergency management directors have minimal staffing compared to large counties. Local needs continue to go unmet due to staff not being available to follow up with unmet needs, recruit additional volunteers, and just general checking on the volunteers as they go out into the community. One of the things that I have noted was that, and I had a volunteer for a while before they were demobilized, but when you're one person and you got all this going on, you don't have time to stay in contact with the volunteers all the time. And we utilized crisis cleanup, which I'll touch on here in a minute, to manage all the incoming calls for homes and people that had debris in their yards or they had trees that they couldn't get to their house or whatever. And during this time, that volunteer, when I had them, they could get into crisis cleanup. They could follow up and see if this home, all their needs were met, or if some of the volunteer organizations, it was beyond their scope, and they weren't able to do but part of the job, but not complete all of it, because there may have been larger debris there than they could have handled with their equipment. So since that time, there has been little to no follow-up because we just don't have the staff. And so that's an area there that as long as there's debris being picked up, I personally feel like that there needs to be a volunteer coordinator in the EOC helping out. Housing provided to those displaced by the loss of their home has begun. However, quicker response identifying and meeting these needs early on would be beneficial. The use of organizations such as Crisis Cleanup to register for debris assistance and cleanup with volunteer organizations serves a great purpose. However, we were unable to register with Crisis Cleanup to have visibility in all of our cases. Greater transparency between the federal, state, and local jurisdictions and agencies would be very helpful. Information sharing is a key issue. User and data sharing agreements would be very beneficial. And in a moment, whenever we get into the question and answer, if you have any questions about that, I'll be glad to explain. The need for larger equipment to remove large trees outside of right-of-way areas. We run into that from day one. I'll go back to our farmers and being an agriculturally based area. A lot of them had large equipment. Soon as the storm was over, our initial push through was to get the roads in Lafayette County from Interstate 10 all the way to Steinhatchee opened up because at that time we didn't know what had hit the coastal communities. And we knew that the interstates was going to be important to get food, supplies, and items like that to the coastal areas. Operational costs due to losses and inflation for the farmers, coupled with the slow process for assistance from our federal partners, will continue to have a devastating consequences to our local farmers. The timber industry is under a lot of stress right now, not only with the hurricane, but with the mill closure in Taylor County. We are also concerned about the possibility of wildfires in the future with all the downed trees and limbs and debris that's still out there in our county. And one thing that I know that we've got to work on in Lafayette County is our sheltering operations. It got, you know, as the storm increased in intensity, you know, it went from a tropical storm to a hurricane, and most of you followed it, and I won't repeat how it grew. But our shelters are our schools, and our school is not rated but for 110 miles an hour. It could not stand a strong category 4 or 3 storm. So that's an area that we've got to work on. It's been hardened, so I don't know what the answer is. So I don't know that there's a lot of hardening can be done to it. And small as Mayo is with one red light, we just don't have many buildings. And so anyhow, if y'all would take that into consideration when the time comes. Well, this concludes some of the positive and negatives as I've seen, you know, working in emergency management. It's not my day-to-day operation, as y'all can see. I'm normally a lieutenant with the sheriff's office, but we had a departure of our emergency management director, and you know, it's one of them things, tag your if for now. So, again, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for your insights. Next up, we have Lee Bassford, Emergency Management Director for Madison County. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Grant and Vice Chair Botana, for the opportunity to speak with you today. On behalf of Madison County, I appreciate the opportunity to come before the Hurricane Resiliency Committee to discuss our recent impacts from Hurricane Idalia. On the morning of August 30th, Madison County was slammed by the force of Hurricane Idalia. Never in documented history of our county has such an event took place. The landscape of our small community was changed forever. The once beautiful 100-year-old oaks that lined our streets, driveways, and properties were ripped from the ground by Idalia's force. This presented one of the most significant challenges to date for Madison County. Debris and down power lines covered the area. No portions of our county were left untouched by Idalia's force. 100% of our county experienced power outages, some for over 7 days. As massive trees rained down on the community, residences and businesses crumbled under their weight. Over 396 structures were affected by Idalia, with 22 destroyed homes and 9 destroyed commercial buildings. Even our evacuation shelter received water infiltration as we were housing some of our most vulnerable citizens. As Idalia cleared the area, the EOC, in conjunction with state and local partners, went to work to assess damage, rescue trapped citizens, and clear paths for resources to come into the county. By end of day on the 30th, we had identified and requested points of distribution for food, water, and tarps for our citizens, as well as mutual aid to assist our law enforcement and health systems. I would like to point out and thank the Florida Division of Emergency Management for their quick response to our immediate community needs. The legislators' increased support of the division over the last several years was reflected in this response. The division quickly responded to our needs, first and foremost with assistance with debris removal. Mutual aid from all over Florida's emergency management community poured into Madison County, proving instrumental in EOC operations. Over 200 missions were ultimately requested through the division for assistance with our county during response. We thank Director Guthrie and his staff for their commitment to Madison County. Our response to Hurricane Idalia revealed both successes and identified weaknesses within our response and recovery systems. As previously mentioned, our biggest need was assistance with debris removal. The Florida Division of Emergency Management responded to our mission request, and ultimately FDOT was charged with debris removal in Madison and other neighboring counties. I cannot stress enough to this committee how important that was to Madison County. Debris cleanup, as you all know, comes with million-dollar price tags. A fiscally constrained county such as ours and those surrounding us would not have been able to carry that load with such small budgets. This process, whether it be through FDOT or other means coordinated by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, should be deemed a best practice for future events to aid Florida's fiscally constrained counties. Carrying such costs while waiting on federal reimbursements, often years, would sink small counties and be a roadblock to building back stronger and becoming more resilient. With the largest activation in Madison County's history, more resources and people flooded into the county than ever before. Critical resources for search and rescue, law enforcement, health, emergency management, fire, and energy all sent representatives to the EOC for coordination efforts. This was a significant challenge we faced during Idalia. The current Madison County Emergency Operations Center is 2,500 square feet. On a blue sky day, this building holds 25 people comfortably. For week after week, up to 75 people were in and out of the EOC for response coordination, call taking, feeding, and bunking, presenting numerous challenges during this response. A legislative appropriation request is being submitted for a phased public safety complex for the county that incorporates a larger EOC capable of handling future responses as large as Hurricane Idalia. We ask for your consideration and support in this request. Staffing of the Emergency Operations Center in Madison County and other small counties was also an issue during this event. We have a staff of 2 people in our EOC on a daily basis to handle all preparedness, response, recovery, and mitigation tasks. Director Guthrie mentioned me by name specifically in the Hurricane Ian Resiliency meeting, stating that he and I discussed that I wished I had more time to focus and prepare for recovery. He is absolutely correct in that fact. Limited staff due to funding results in having to choose areas of focus for emergency managers. When 1 or 2 staff are charged with grants administration, tracking, training, exercise, recovery, mitigation, response, and planning, it becomes impossible to be a master of everything. The majority of funding for our program comes through the Emergency Management Preparedness Assistance Grant that each county receives. This funding comes from the surcharge on homeowner, renter, and business insurance policies. Each of the 67 counties received just over $105,000, and this amount has remained unchanged in over 20 years. While some counties do not have the need to expend these funds annually, I can say to Madison County and most fiscally constrained counties that this funding is the lifeline of their programs. Increased EMPA funding going into the local emergency management programs is essential to being able to fill these staffing gaps that handcuff fiscally constrained counties. I believe Flagler County Director Jonathan Lord previously requested that the legislator direct the Florida Department of Revenue to audit how the Emergency Management Preparedness and Assistance Trust Fund surcharge is applied to all residential and commercial properties for compliance with Florida Statute 252.372 to address revenue stagnation. I fully support and encourage such an audit. Additionally, directing the Florida Division of Emergency Management to allocate more of the EMPA funds to local EM programs would directly address staffing deficiencies. We are certainly grateful and appreciate the current funding. However, increases in every cost for operations depletes the funding faster than ever before. Increases would allow for essential planning and training and exercise activities for better response and a more resilient community. As we continue on our journey to recovery, mitigation is more important now than ever. We need to build back stronger. We need to put systems in place that will help the community become more resilient and less reliant on post-disaster assistance. As a result of this disaster, federal mitigation funds will be available to communities affected by Hurricane Idalia. While these funds could play a significant role in the resiliency of each of our communities, the simple fact is that mitigation projects vital to our fiscally constrained communities require a 25% match. Therefore, millions of dollars that could potentially flow into our small counties will be unclaimed by those who need them most. Small tax bases and small budgets don't allow for hundreds and thousands of dollars in match funding. I encourage legislators to consider implementation of funding for mitigation project match for the small counties impacted by Idalia. Otherwise, these funds trickle back to larger counties, and the strong get stronger, and the most vulnerable continue to struggle. I've spent a good deal of time discussing operational needs within emergency management as it relates to Hurricane Idalia, but now I want to talk about the most important part of Madison County. I want to talk about its people, their needs, and the humanitarian and economic impacts of Hurricane Idalia. Madison County is one of the poorest counties in Florida. It is home to roughly 18,000 people, and a third of them live under the poverty level. A quarter of them are 65 and older. There is a significant population percentage that are unable to bear financial burdens of disaster-related costs, and most physically are unable to clear their own properties of debris. Getting help for the elderly, disabled, and our veterans remains challenging as volunteer groups were spread thin throughout the area, with many of our neighboring counties facing the same issues as us. Most groups have now left the area, and we are struggling to find volunteer groups with heavy equipment to assist our most vulnerable residents. Our long-term recovery group has been established, and we have needs coming in daily. Most important is the need for use of this heavy equipment, as our crisis cleanup list remains near 360 individuals. Additionally, as Bobby mentioned, Hurricane Idalia hit our biggest industry, the agricultural industry. Our area is home to many farms, and impacts from Idalia have been extensive. Entire poultry farms are flattened, and the uninsured or underinsured have been hit the hardest. As I met with the president of the Cattlemen's Association, he voiced his needs and concerns related specifically to the ag community. Hundreds of miles of downed fencing devastated the cattle industry. Farmers struggle to contain herds, some even having to sell them off due to containment issues. Farmers struggle to get in supplies for fencing repairs, and in addition, face difficulty in getting tradesmen that could assist in these repairs. They relied heavily on each other, and neighbor helping neighbor was a common theme in the days following Idalia. The passing of House Bill 1C will bring much needed relief to our agricultural industry. The aid provided by this bill will be instrumental in getting our ag industry back on its feet. Thank you all for the support of House Bill 1C. Madison County continues on the road to recovery. The most challenging issues we face daily is the need for public, accessible, non-county maintained roadways to be cleared of debris, and the need for volunteer groups with heavy equipment to assist our elderly. State and federal aid have been essential in our recovery. And again, we thank you for your support through the Florida Division of Emergency Management and through House Bill 1C. Committees such as this one shows the commitment to making all of Florida and its communities more resilient. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that presentation. Next up, we have Commissioner Travis Land from Suwannee County. You're recognized.
Thank you, Leader Grant and Vice Chair Botana and fellow members of the committee for having me today. I'm not sure exactly how I follow that up. She pretty much hit it out of the park, I believe. Very well said, Ms. Basford. As an elected official myself, I'd like to personally thank each of you for your service and that of all of our state officials. It is often a thankless job, so I commend you on the sacrifices you make in your personal lives to make our state better. Thank you. I especially want to thank Representative Jason Schoaf for everything he did for our community, pre-impact, post-impact, and what he continues to do with HB 1C. Thank you, Representative Schoaf. He and his counterpart, Senator Corey Simon, have been very present in our community. I'd also like to acknowledge Representative Tant, who represents our neighbors, Madison, as well as Jefferson, to our west. They were also impacted and have been overwhelmingly helpful during this time. So thank you all for that. I'd also like to thank Governor DeSantis and Commissioner of Agriculture, Wilton Simpson, for visiting our communities and marshaling support immediately after the storm. As all the folks on the panel, I believe, have said, specifically the governor for authorizing Florida Department of Transportation to handle our debris removal. That would have been catastrophic to our finances in Suwannee County. We're all fiscally constrained and just not prepared to handle that. So I thank them for that. I also thank Director Kevin Guthrie You all know who he is, for quick action and already posting up new grant programs approved last week. And one more I'd like to thank was Senator Albritton for coming to see the devastation himself and how it impacted our small, rural, fiscally constrained county. Thankfully, today I didn't have to chainsaw my way over here as I did the day after the impact to our EOC. But it's times like this that you truly recognize your areas of vulnerability, and as you've heard, we have many. However, I do not come here today looking for a handout or a free ride. As you will hear from all of us fiscally constrained counties, we're a resilient bunch. We'll figure out how to get it done, but having a hand up would sure be helpful. During your special session last week, you guys addressed many of our concerns. Some of these speeches were written prior to that, I do believe. So I thank you for HB1C. That's going to be a big help. But there's more to do. But funding to pay the local match for FEMA support, that's going to be tremendous. As Ms. Bassford said, that would have left potentially millions on the sidelines for our rural counties unclaimed due to the match. Funds for recovery costs, for the recovery costs in the fiscally constrained counties up to $50 million. Funding for the SCOP program to repair our roads, which some of these road damages will not be recognized until post-debris contract removal due to the impact of the trucks, which we're very thankful for, and the damage that they're causing. And the grant planning for design of new emergency operation centers, or EOCs. I mean, most of these guys up here are either EOC directors or directly involved, so that'll be huge for us. But I'd ask you going forward to be mindful of the impact of local revenues, specifically ad valorem taxes in our fiscally constrained counties. There's going to be an impact to the tax rolls, and that we don't know yet what it'll be. I have a few observations that may or may not provide some ideas to help make this experience better for the next time around. As we all know, it will happen again, hopefully not for a long time. And as our sheriff from Jefferson said, hopefully not on my watch. It's been exhausting, but rewarding. The last storm of this magnitude to make direct landfall in our area was over 100 years ago. So, as they've all said, agricultural impacts, the poultry houses, the dairy barns, many of those are uninsurable due to the unable to provide or to acquire wind insurance. They're south of what is deemed the NOAA line. Some of you may know what that is, some of you may not, but many of those houses are uninsured to wind damage. So the losses are self-insured, if you will. Some of those are going to be catastrophic to the potential or the poultry producers and their harvest. Many of them lost millions of birds in those. Those are unrecoverable. Our timber stands, many of them 50% down, some close to 100. And as they've also said, a double whammy to the timber industry in our area is the closing of the GP mill in Taylor County. That has plummeted timber values in our area. Pulpwood's now less than $10 a ton, which is basically, if that is your retirement vehicle, you can't harvest. You can't harvest at $10 a ton, even with 50% of it laying on the dirt. What I would really encourage, indirectly related to the storm, is for the state to get involved, Department of Commerce or someone, to try to find a way to get a new buyer or get that GP mill back open. It's not just Taylor County, it's our whole region that's going to be impacted significantly due to that. Row crop farmers, I mean, and I tell you some of these things for the folks that haven't had the opportunity to come see it for themselves. I don't remember the one, but down here to my right, someone mentioned many times the media doesn't pick up rural. Not that our need is any less, but there's just less people affected. But the need is still there and the damage is still there. Pivots are flipped upside down, cattle producers, fence damage, miles of it, myself included, loss of cattle due to trees falling on them. On our telecommunication side, we had cell towers go down after the storm, not because of the tower had sustained damage, but because they didn't have generator backup. That shouldn't be allowed. Losing cell phone service due to the lack of a generator in today's world, that there should be legislation that prohibits that or requires them to put that up. Our only cellular service came by resources that were brought in by the different providers on trailers. And we went without that for 3 days post-impact. Our local radio station, no generator backup. It wasn't that they couldn't disseminate information via radio. I mean, part of our storm preparedness is buy batteries, get your radio. Well, our radio station's down. Internet's down. Social media's down. How do you tell people where to go, what to do, what's coming? There's no communication whatsoever. Our fiber providers, our main tower inside the city limits of Live Oak, and I won't name the company, but their fiber line to that tower was down without reporting it to the local and city officials. So even if there was generator backup on that particular tower, the fiber line coming to the tower was completely down and was for several days post-impact. How do you disseminate information in today's world without the internet? Our radios for our first responders, most of us physically constrained counties, including Suwannee, we're still running on VHF radios with our own county-maintained towers spread out around our county. The state agencies are running the SLRS, the state law enforcement radio system, which is much better than the VHS, but they're also very expensive. When towers being down, our county workers could not communicate via radios or cell phones for up to 3 days post-impact. There should be some type of universal plan, if you will, for radio communications during disasters to enable communication across jurisdictions with all the state agencies as well as your local agencies. Luckily for us, the strike teams, which were a blessing that FDEM sent in, which were EOC directors, and y'all correct me if I'm wrong, from across the state that had experienced storms such as this that came into our county and others, I'm sure, and kind of helped us take the reins. They had been there, done that, if you will. Those strike teams were a blessing, been there, done that type stuff, and really helped us navigate those waters that haven't been charted in our county for 100 years. Thankfully, those strike teams brought their own communications, and we were able to assign those to our Public Works Department guys that were out in the field assessing the damage and clearing the roads. Prior to them, there was no communication. We were operating via Pony Express, you know. On our housing, many of them talked about shelters, rural, fiscally constrained. Our schools are our shelters. We have to vacate our schools a day or two pre-impact to prep for them to become a shelter. Storm hit on a Wednesday, the following, not the next Thursday, but the following Thursday, we were directed from Tallahassee to get kids back in school. We still had 40 families in our elementary school. We had to bust those counties over to our neighboring city, Lake City, and put them in a motel until the FEMA youth services housing was erected, which still took several weeks. Those funds are reimbursable, but nonetheless, you have families disconnected from their home and their families in a neighboring community because we don't have a shelter. We do, but it's our school. Let's see. I personally believe there's a very large need for a regional shelter. Suwannee County is located at the I-75, I-10 corridor in the center of the state, away from coastlines. The wind is still significant. It could be a staging area for the mobile housing units brought in to house the post-impact support teams. In Live Oak, all of those housing units, trailers, were all of the first responders and strike teams and whatnot that the state sent in. Those were located in the parking lot of our high school. Fencing was erected around those to keep the students, when they came back to school, separate. Those trailers were there for 4 weeks. Nonetheless, our students were displaced from their parking lot due to the trailers in our high school parking lot. We talked about EOC structures. One day prior to impact, we had to vacate our EOC and relocate everything in our school administration building. Representative Schoaf was there, It was a storm inside of a storm. So the resources piling in. Our EOC is 80 years old. We felt like it could not withstand what was coming to us. We would have vacated it sooner, but as the storm intensified and got stronger, we were afraid we can't stay here. Our resources may not be here. Impact. So we had to vacate those to our school board office. And then as those resources came in, the Verizons and the whatnot, all of their trailers spread out all amongst our elementary school, which our school board office is located next to one of our elementary schools. So all of these support trailers are there. Kids back in school. We have to break all that down, move it to our EOC, which luckily only sustained minor damage. All of this 8 days post-impact. A very large logistical burden on those folks that were here to help us. So having a hardened EOC structures, as I believe every county that's here today, does not have what is deemed hardened in today's terms. EOC, as Ms. Basford discussed, EOCs throughout the state are funded through grant money. The EMPA grant, which is funded through the state insurance fund, has not increased in over 20 years. That $105,000 that she discussed, that's fact. That funds Suwannee County's EOC with a little bit of help from our general fund. Same amount of money for the past 20 years. What I think is a better idea is, and this, you know, may not be totally popular, but I think in your rural, fiscally constrained counties, obviously we need funding, we need help for those EOCs, but regional EOCs that would support two or three geographically located communities amongst each other and provide those the resources and the funding to help those two or three counties around it would be way better than what we have today. Much more resources, much more justification for those resources. Match funds are required on mitigation grants. Being fiscally constrained, we cannot afford to apply for these grants due to the match. Be a tremendous help if the state would waive these, which some have been and probably hopefully will continue to be so with 1C. Our fire and rescue personnel are most centrally located geographically fire station in Suwannee County is a double-wide mobile home. Those first responders had to relocate into our school board office. I tell you that to tell you we're not wasteful. We're trying. We're just constrained, as is everyone here. In closing, the outside support was incredible. FDEM and their staff, including Director Guthrie, were amazing and continue to be. Having FDOT come in and take over our debris removal was life-saving for our county. We could have never afforded it. I'd also again like to thank Senator Simon and Representative Show for the bill that has addressed many of these concerns that I laid out for you today. I look forward to working with them and all of you together to rebuild our community. There are too many municipalities across the state that sent staff and equipment. I cannot thank them all, but Suwannee County will be forever indebted, yet ready and willing to repay those debts when the need arises. Character isn't built on the mountain, it's built in the valley. And the folks sitting in this panel have been building character the last couple months. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you for being here. Next up, we have LaWanna Pemberton, County Administrator for Taylor County. Welcome, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair Grant and Vice Chair Batana and committee members for the opportunity to speak with you today. Hurricane Idalia made landfall in Taylor County on August 30th as the strongest hurricane to hit the Big Bend region in over 125 years. Due to the storm surge and powerful winds, Idalia left a path of destruction throughout Taylor County and surrounding counties. I would like to also thank Representative Schoaf and Senator Simon for the work and support in the aftermath of the storm, Governor DeSantis and Ag Commissioner Wilton Simpson for visiting our communities and offering support, Kevin Guthrie, Director of Division of Emergency Management and the State EOC, for the actions supporting Taylor County, which was nothing less than incredible. They did such a fantastic job for us, and I'm forever grateful. Rep. Schoaf, thank you for House Bill 1C. and the companion bill 2C by Corey Simon during the special session. This will offer the much-needed support for Taylor County, providing the funding to pay for the local match for FEMA support, funds for recovery costs in the fiscally constrained counties, funding for small county outreach program, and grants for planning and design for new emergency operations centers, which Taylor County desperately needs. One of the issues that Taylor County has faced in the wake of Idalia storm debris. I am thankful our governor issued a directive to remove the financial and administrative burden for debris removal from impacted counties. While I am grateful for this assistance from the state, there has been an ongoing issue with the Florida Department of Transportation's debris removal program, which will not allow for debris removal on non-county maintained roads. Taylor County, which is also known as the tree capital of the South, has a tremendous amount of mainly vegetative debris that was generated from Hurricane Idalia. As of today, the FDOT debris removal contractor has removed over 1.4 million cubic yards of debris from rights of way, and they have not completed the first pass as of yet. This equates to about $20 million for Taylor County alone. I would expect a large amount of debris from non-county maintained roads as well, and Taylor County does not have the funding to remove the debris that is in question, especially in the wake of the Georgia Pacific mill closure, as this will have a devastating financial impact for Taylor County. The revenue from that mill represents 28% of our general fund and 33% of our MSTU. I will offer that rural counties such as Taylor and surrounding counties may be unique in that a portion of our roads are not county maintained, but they are open to the public. In other words, they are not roads in gated communities and access is not restricted. There are approximately 300 miles of non-county maintained roads, which is about 29% in Taylor County, that citizens and relief agencies have utilized to collect vegetative debris without a mechanism for removal. It does appear that there may be funding available within the Hurricane Idalia relief bill just recently passed, but we're really not sure of the details to access the funding at this time. I don't know if it will be direct funding or we'll have to expend funds and ask for reimbursement, and that creates a problem for many of our counties. From what I understand, there is FEMA reimbursement available for debris removal on non-county maintained roads per our public assistance grant consulting and FEMA guidance, but FDOT has not changed their plan as of yet. This has resulted in miles of roads with vegetative debris staged in the right-of-way. Some of the roads are one-lane passable, and the debris may cause additional safety hazards such as rodent infestation, fire hazards, and visibility issues. I am here today to request consideration for policy that, moving forward, will allow for FDOT debris removal on non-county maintained roads so that all citizens may have a mechanism for debris removal. I'm afraid that some of our citizens are being disenfranchised this opportunity. They are all taxpayers. They all have a large amount of debris that they have managed to get to the rights of way, and we don't have a plan for them as of yet. I would also like to discuss the current Emergency Management Planning Assistant grant funding amount. As you've heard, this amount has been unchanged for years, while other costs have increased. I would respectfully request consideration for an increase in this amount to counties so that we all may be better prepared in the future. Taylor County will be facing not only the financial impact of the Georgia Pacific mill closure, but that there may be continued impacts in terms of reduction of the local tax roll when homeowners who have properties that are uninhabitable seek refunds of value of damaged property. I thank the members of this committee for your time and allowing me to speak with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you all again for being here. Just a quick comment before I open up for questions. Most of us on this panel have experienced hurricanes that impacted our areas, our communities, which is probably why the speaker put us here. Some of the things that we've heard from you today are new to us, but a lot of the things are universal. Whether you live in a rural community or an urban community, a rich community, a poor community, debris removal has been an issue. Shelters are an issue. EOCs are an issue. Commissioner, I was glad that you were bringing up the fact that maybe for some of the smaller fiscally constrained communities, we should look to maybe a regional approach to EOCs and shelters. I think that that makes sense. But I want to open it up now for questions for members of the panel so that we can increase our knowledge of how this hurricane in particular impacted your community. So, members, other questions? Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions, if you don't mind. So in respect to the, I heard about the non-public roads, non-county-owned roads in about basically all of my counties, and I've heard it over and over. And I understand most of those non-road, not most, but a great deal of that is of those roads are used for customary conveyance, like the school bus drivers, like the emergency vehicles. Do you have any idea, like if we were to create a tax, you're right, they are taxpayers. Do you know how many miles of this road, or is there a way to compute how many miles of this road are used for customary conveyances so that we could make sure that we take care of those roads first in some sort of triage fashion?
You're recognized.
I don't have the number of miles in front of me, but I'm sure that we could come up with that number. But they're all publicly accessible roads. And the 300 miles that I determined for Taylor County, those all have homes within 1,000 feet. These are not forestry roads. These are roads to homes.
Anybody else?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you for that answer, and that I've heard that the same in Madison County as well. In respect to, I wanted to ask my Jefferson County sheriff about what you think we need to do. I know we were, in some respects, the least impacted, and thank God for that, right? But at the same time, I wanted to see what you think we could do in Jefferson to be ready for the next possible storm of this fashion.
Sheriff, you're recognized.
Yes, ma'am. You know, when the storm was over, we went back and looked at things and tried to find ways that we could do things that, you know, might have been done better. And, you know, one of our concerns is a lot of our distribution points. You know, we need to make sure that we have generators ability at some of those points to make sure that we can power them up because it's a 24/7 operation. Some of the other concerns we had are some of our elderly, and where would they go when they're without power for a week or two? And they're, you know, some of the most vulnerable in a storm like this. And so we had looked at ways to having certain facilities wired up and had them as well generated so that way we could transport them and have them in a cooling station or someplace where they could, you know, get out of the elements. One of the biggest things I found as the sheriff is, you know, the state did such a great job of providing us all these resources as far as food and water and tarps and stuff, and we had these distribution points, but it was from that point, once they were dropped off that semi, how do you get them from there to other places they need it at further distribution points that we wanted to set up to get them close to the people? And, you know, I had 20-hour days where I had I'm a sheriff, but I drive a pickup truck, and I had a trailer, and I had that thing loaded down, you know, all hours of the day, moving supplies around myself, because the National Guard, when they showed up, they came to hand out stuff. But I think it would be better to have the National Guard prepared to come with the equipment to help transport some of these items once they arrive at the distribution points. And I can't speak for the other counties, but, I mean, there was a whole week and a half that our guys were going 24/7 moving these items around because we didn't have that infrastructure in place. And so sandbags is something to even think about. You know, when you know a storm's coming, you want to get these sandbags, and people want to get them and try to help barricade their homes the best they can. But when you got an elderly population, how do you go about getting these sandbags filled for them? And, you know, we don't have the infrastructure or the manpower to do something like that. And, yeah, there are sandbag filling machines. There's things that you can get to help these people that are in your community prepare for these storms. So, you know, again, we keep hitting on this. We're all fiscally constrained counties here, and it's all about the resources and the funds to provide these things. But I can't say enough about what the state did for us. And again, I don't want anybody to feel I'm knocking the National Guard because they did an amazing job. But there were just certain things that I think that they should be prepared a little better to help us with. And that's what that's one of the shortcomings I saw. And I've been involved in state government, you know, for the last 20 years. I worked for FDLE, so I did a lot of travel to different hurricane-affected areas, and always saw what an amazing job that the National Guard and the state EOC did. But these are some of the things that we saw, especially as they drop, you know, you get all this stuff there, but how do you move it from that one location? And your community, as good as they can be to you, you know, and we're from a small rural, got them good old boys and girls, they know how to get stuff done. But, you know, once they're affected, sometimes they can't get out and help you as much as you would like. And that's why we were relying on the state to accomplish this, or ourselves. So, you know, my question is, is this something that the state provides, or is this something that we try to do in a grant to where these little counties will have these items ready for themselves for the next storm? And that'd be something, I guess, the legislation will have to think about and see how they want to handle that.
Thank you. Representative Chair.
My last question for now. In respect to the regional EOCs, I was wondering what you all thought about that. And since I've got my folks here, I wanted to ask Ms. Bassford that first.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Tant. I'll start with saying this. All disasters are local. And our successes during response rely heavily on our ability to know what's going on within our community and in our county. If we are two or three counties over, I lose that visibility. And I don't have my local stakeholders, I don't have my local decision makers in that room, most likely, because they're not going to want to travel the distance. So I need those folks in the room make an informed decision. I need to know what's going on within my county so that I can address it. And I feel we lose visibility, and we are essentially setting our counties up for failure on that.
Recognize for another follow-up.
Follow-up question. What about the idea of roving people that could rove within, you know, be assigned to rove between two or three counties that are with the state EOC, who could then be extra hands and staff for you during and after storms on a full-time basis?
You're recognized.
And post Adelia, that was the case. The Florida Division of Emergency Management had both response and recovery personnel coming into our county, and we were then able to address our community's needs for both response and recovery. So that is a system that worked for them coming into our counties.
Members, any other questions? Any other questions? Representative Schoaf, comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Most of my questions have already talked with y'all offline and throughout the storm and after the storm, and conveyed a lot of that information to the chair. I just really appreciate you all making time to come up here, especially now. The storm's passed, but you're all still really busy. And so thank you for taking the time to come up here. Mr. Lawson, I think you said it best. You said when you were talking about how Lafayette County not only prioritized clearing the roads, your key roads in your county, but you also made it a priority to clear a path from I-10 all the way down to Steinhatchee. Now, I-10 and Steinhatchee are not in your county, but you have big hearts, and you care about your neighbors, and you took the time to clear that road because you knew that it ran through your county and they needed help down at the coast. That's just the kind of people that are in rural North Florida, and it shines in times like this. The shelters in the schools, it's just a fact of life when you've got a fiscally constrained county with a tiny budget. I mean, some of these counties have budgets less than $3 million a year, and they may have one employee working on emergency management. And in your case, it's not even someone that does emergency management. It's someone that came to work that day and tag, you're it. So my hat's off to you. But when we put shelters in schools, as a necessary evil, it does impede recovery. These parents need their kids to get back in school, and oftentimes a lot of the kids in these communities, that's the only way they're going to eat. So getting them back in that school is critical. We have to, as a state, address this issue and find ways to create shelters and emergency operation centers free from the school zones. When it comes to shelters, we can't have shelters being evacuated right before the storm hits. We have to be able to make sure we've got folks in these shelters. And again, this isn't something that I believe anyone's at fault. We just haven't had a storm hit these rural counties in 100 years. So this is a first in modern times up here. So we're learning lessons, and that's why we're here today, to address them. When we can't tax our way out of it and build new shelters in these fiscally constrained counties, much less pay for ones for those with special needs that require extra, an extra commitment. We have to take a look at that. Hardening our communication systems is critical. Commissioner, I remember talking to you after the storm, and you'd have to drive a couple of miles down the road to get a signal, and then, you know, we had to time the next call. But that's how that worked there. And I remember after Hurricane Michael in Gulf County, the Sheriff's Department had to dust off a ham radio that was in their basement and use it to communicate with Tallahassee. And that's how it works. And so it's time for us to upgrade these systems and harden them and modernize them and provide that peace of mind that we, you know, we're a storm state, and we're going to see many more of these. I could not be more proud of the work of the state. They did a heck of a job. They were in very fast, did an amazing job at recovery, and they're still doing an amazing job. These non-county maintained roads, you've all heard this over and over today, it's a theme. May not be that way in other counties, but up where I'm from, that's a normal thing. We've got a lot of roads that are just there, and you know, the county doesn't county maintains them, or the city may maintain them, or the community may maintain them, but they are critical. You've got buses that have to go pick these kids up. You've got ambulances that have to get down them. And many times, that may be the only way to get down to a state park. I know we ran into that issue in Taylor County and passed legislation to protect those roads because they're so important. I would ask this committee to take everything you heard today and let's figure out some things we can do to help out. Thank you, Chair, for hosting this great crew today.
Thank you. Representative Chant, anything to say?
I just wanted to say to you, Mr. Chair, thank you for reaching out to, frankly, people I see as heroic. They really stepped into a role they never knew they were going to have with very little support, and they really did amazing work on a 24-hour, seven-day-a-week basis with the hearts of a hero and the work ethic that transcended anything that had ever been asked of them. And I just want to thank you for bringing them here. I'd also like to thank publicly my colleague. He doesn't like it when I call him out because he says I don't do this for that, but Representative Shove, who represents five out of y'all or maybe more, and I just want to thank him for the bill that we put forward last week and voted for, and for his voice. He is someone I go to on a regular basis when it comes to this, and so you all, we're so lucky to be here today and to be working on this. I'm very grateful. And again, you all did amazing work. And I know you must have found it very exhausting, but it was quite an honor to listen to you all today, and a bigger honor to be able to work alongside the folks that I'm lucky enough to represent. So but thank you. We got a lot of work to do.
So. Thank you. Representative Moon.
Thank you, Chair. Great presentations, and I think the chair said it best. You know, most people in here have experienced hurricanes. I'm from Monroe County, so while we seem like we're not rural, we're very rural. We're 120 miles long and roughly about a half mile wide on average. You know, I heard the same things today that we experienced in Irma. Communications, what do we do with goods that have been graciously given to us with nowhere to take them, no way to get them there, no way to get the roads, the private roads. I did hear that doesn't sound like many of you have an emergency response team ready to go, a private company, and I understand why, because of what it could do up front. But FEMA and the state have worked well together after Irma, so that you can actually get money up front from FEMA based on what the experts say, which would be a recovery team slash a FEMA team slash the Department of Emergency Management, and say, look, you've got a half million, I can see right now, yards ready to go. You can get reimbursed up front, so I would highly encourage you to reach out from your communities and find yourself response team. It doesn't cost you a dime to have that on the shelf. They're going to put their bids in. They're going to tell you how much they want for their cubic yard. And when we formed the city of Alamorada all the way back in 98, the first criticism we got from the county was, you guys can't handle a hurricane. And sure, lo and behold, you know, rolls into October, and we've got Hurricane George rolling through. But we handle it. You can handle it, and there are ways to do it. And I highly encourage you to do that, because it will make a difference for you as leaders and that pressure that's on your shoulders. And again, you don't have to exercise the program if you don't want to, but there is a fast track now for you to get your money from FEMA as opposed to taking it out of your budget. I understand you're fiscally constrained. You know, we were blessed to have a 40% reserve in Alamorada. That's unheard of. We did it for one specific reason. And it wasn't easy to get reelected telling people, yeah, we're not spending money frivolously. But when it happens, it's going to happen, we're going to have it. So you can move fast when you have the reserves. In your case, not so easy. That said, I encourage you to do that. And the cell tower thing, I can't even imagine not having generation. I used to be in the cell tower world and never seen one without generation. So it must have been small company or very old. But, yeah, we didn't do something about that and make sure it doesn't happen again. But, again, you know, kudos to you all for surviving it. And, man, you know, those private roads and cleaning up is – but there are ways to get around that as well. Communications, there are grants from FEMA. We have our own cell tower system now in our fire department. It's basically free to our fire department. We don't have to worry about those guys rolling in with their antennas 5 days later. And thank God for Mike G right there who came to Alamorada and set up his antennas when he was with the guard. So I understand it all. And again, you know, that's all knock on wood and pray that we don't have to deal with this again for you. But we're all ears here, and I think you're going to get some results from this. And, again, God bless you guys for surviving it with the strength you did.
Any other comments, questions, members? Seeing none, I just want to thank you all again for being here. I think we've all learned a lot. Hopefully you've picked up some nuggets from us in return. I want to thank staff. It's not easy to coordinate a meeting like this where you have people coming from multiple counties, multiple jurisdictions to speak and inform us of what's going on. So thank you for giving me the credit, but I need to pass that along to the people who really did all the hard work. So members, this concludes our committee agenda, and seeing no further business before the select committee, Representative Tant moves we rise. Without objection, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you.